Welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly podcast, where we critically inspect some topical developments with a leadership and management theme. I'm business and finance journalist Matt Packer, and in this podcast I'll be exploring stories up to Friday the 13th of July. Joining me in this task, as ever, is the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello there, Kate.
Hello, Matt.
All right, in our first story, rail operator Govia Thameslink has crept back into the news agenda for all the wrong reasons. Regular listeners will recall that in late May, we covered the effects of the firm's decision to rewrite timetables on some of the UK's busiest train services. Now, customer dissatisfaction has taken on a more personal dimension following an incident on Tuesday the 10th of July in which the firm's head of network operations, Mark Boone, ordered passengers out of a first-class carriage on a packed and late Govia train, telling them that they couldn't get in if they only had standard tickets. Passenger and Twitter user Emma Fitzpatrick then shared a photo of Boone and his luggage taking up two seats in the otherwise practically empty carriage. What does Boone's authoritarian approach say about his attitude to customer service?
What an opportunity to repair some of the damage and some of the media profile of Govia Thameslink. All he actually had to do in this situation was behave with some human compassion. I mean, there have been questions about whether he had the authority to check tickets anyway.
Yes.
But in a way, that was a great excuse because he could have said, look, I'm sure I'm not supposed to do this. Few spare seats in here. Please use them.
Yeah.
And instead, that photo with him having his bag on a seat when there are people standing, and he had such a great opportunity that he missed. Do they not realise how the customer is so important?
Yeah, I mean, it's a failure of imagination in many ways, isn't it? He could have taken a more discretionary approach with more generosity of spirit, I think, is what we're looking at here.
Exactly, connecting with people on a human level, because if he was one of the standing passengers seeing empty seats in first class, that's the feeling he should have been connecting with, rather than the more privileged, well, I've got a first class ticket. Not only am I entitled to use it, I'm also entitled to keep people out. What was he thinking?
Yeah, and I think the real problem here is that you think, well, that's one executive at this company. Is this emblematic of everybody in senior positions at that company?
Well, he must manifest the culture to some degree. And that if it's okay to think of passengers as a nuisance or trying to get something that they're not entitled to, you can see why he'd be trying to keep them out of the carriage.
Yes, indeed. Well, there's certainly ethical dimensions to his behaviour, and our next story is also connected with that. A survey from the Institute of Business Ethics has revealed that over the past 3 years, one in six European employees have felt some form of pressure to compromise their organisation's ethical standards. IBE Director Philippa Foster-Back called the findings a worrying development and said, quote, "These figures should be seen as a warning sign to organisations that they need to be more supportive of their employees when it comes to making ethical decisions," close quote. However, there are signs that managers themselves are succumbing to ethical pressures, with 30% considering petty fiddling inevitable in the modern workplace, and 1 in 8 saying that it is acceptable to artificially boost profits in a company's books as long as no money is stolen. Now, what must leaders do to combat this deterioration of standards?
The line, such as it is, will vary from organisation to organisation. Mm-hmm. What is acceptable and what is not acceptable? The difficult thing is, if you don't make these lines obvious and explicit and transparent, people are left to interpret them for themselves.
Yeah.
So they then decide, well, this is okay or this is not okay. But because it's the unspoken rule that it's okay to put a bit extra on your expenses or however else it might manifest itself, nobody's really clear about whether their standards fit within acceptable parameters or not. So one has to say, these are the behaviours we expect, and be so clear about them.
Well, the problem with the unspoken is that it creates a kind of a culture of, well, this is the way we do things around here. And it's not to do with what's on paper. It's to do with what people perceive to be the acceptable thing to do.
It is. And I think we saw that with the MP expenses scandal, that so many of them didn't think they were doing anything wrong because we supplement our salaries, which are lamentably low, or however they experience them, by having generous expenses policies. Mm. Now, that might be the case in some organisations that reward people in different ways. But what you have to do is make it really clear that that is part of their reward package. I think the Netflix expenses policy, which is spend the money as though it were your own, is a great principle. Obviously, behind that, there's all manner of protocols that have to be applied. But you can also question people about their choices of restaurant, their choices of hotel, their choices of travel, because we know we should all be treating the money of the organisation as if it were our own. And how does that impact our decision making?
Yeah. All right. Next up, HMRC has levied record fines of £1.97 million against 239 organisations that failed to pay their staff the national minimum wage and the national living wage over the past year. The taxman has also identified some £1.44 million of back pay for which these organisations are liable, and that's another record. HMRC cited a number of trigger factors for the pay shortfalls, noting that the named and shamed firms have 1. Taken deductions from wages for overheads such as uniform costs, 2. Underpaid apprentices, 3. Failed to pay for travel time, and 4. Used the wrong time periods for calculating pay. What does all this say about leadership within those 239 firms?
Obviously, ignorance of the law, which might be genuinely the case in some of these, is no defence. Mm-hmm. So it's beholden upon you to really understand what you are supposed to pay staff for and what you can and cannot deduct from their wages. So that's really quite a simple thing to put right. I can remember when the minimum wage legislation first came in and people were saying, well, we can't afford to pay people the minimum wage. It will destroy our businesses. Well, then the business model's flawed, isn't it? Because it's not a profitable one. And that's what they've got to be thinking about. If you're not paying people fairly and your response is, well, we can't afford to, well, then you've got to think of another way of being in business, because the one you've chosen obviously doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I've been looking up sort of tactful words to describe this kind of behaviour, and the one that I found that seemed to work best was cheese pairing.
It does seem incredibly mean, but at some point somebody thinks they're making a rational decision. It's back to the Govia Thameslink story. Mm-hmm. It's not connecting with people on a human level. If you're paying people a very low wage and you're making deductions from that, and we know that minimum wage isn't a living wage, how are these people surviving?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, and finally, it's commiserations to the England squad following their 2-1 World Cup semi-final defeat to Croatia. But research published in the run-up to the game by the Institute of Leadership and Management showed that organisations were doing everything they could to bolster the team's support. According to a survey of more than 600 Institute members, 9 out of 10 bosses were happy to let their staff watch World Cup games at work, with around half of them believing it would boost productivity. However, that was not the case at Jaguar Land Rover, where staff were told that shifts would not be shortened for the England-Croatia match because of production targets, and TVs would not be situated on the factory floor because of health and safety. So, were JLR being stingy or sensible?
I think they were being a bit short-sighted. The amount of goodwill it would have generated amongst the staff of Jaguar Land Rover. Again, it's this not really connecting on a human level with people or looking at creative ways of making it up, because there will be disruptions and interruptions to production for all sorts of unexpected reasons. And as we often say, if you can plan for downtime or you can plan for somebody going on parental leave, then it's so much easier than dealing with the unexpected. And our research really was looking at what happens if you don't plan for these things, and you will get higher than usual absenteeism. And that's the thing you want to avoid, because that's what really annoys colleagues.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I thought when I was thinking about this story was that they could perhaps have said, OK, we'll provide facilities for you to watch the game that are away from the factory floor, and you can come away for the duration of the game and then you could go back. So they could kind of extend the shift and do it that way instead.
I know, with very complicated manufacturing, things probably far more difficult than you and I can envisage. Mm. But the fact they could have planned for it, I think, is enormously helpful.
Yeah. Okay, that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section of the Institute's website, which can be found at www.institutelm.com. That's www.institutelm.com. Thank you very much indeed for your insights, Kate. I look forward to exploring a new set of stories with you next week.
Thanks, Matt.